K-Mud Podcast presents.
Hello, this is the Politically Correct Week in Review. I'm zooming in, and there's always the possibility of technical difficulties when this happens. This is a call-in talk show, the second and fourth Monday of the month, and I'm in a remote location at this point. So what's happening? Well, today is a big news item that Canada is having their national elections. The polls are starting to close across in the eastern part of the nation. They do a different kind of politics than we do. You know, the Trudeau resigned a little while ago, and it wasn't like that was the end of everything, because the way that parliaments work is that prime ministers rise up through the ranks of political leadership with the approval of their parties. And so the Canadians are going to the polls today and voting for their local representatives in Parliament, in the House of Commons. And depending on how many people from what party get elected nationally determines who is in the majority as a party. And then the party structure decides who within that party will be the leader of that party, and they become the prime minister, who then has to assemble a government with his ministers of commerce and defense, et cetera, out of the proportional representation of the parties that have won. So it's a big negotiation between all the parties and all the participants and all the electorate who actually is in control. Interestingly, when Trudeau went down, he cited problems and lack of faith, and it was sort of a vote of no confidence in a way. He sort of saw the writing on the wall that the Liberal Party in Canada was not as popular as it was once was. And so he stepped down, and it was looked to be a hard road ahead for the Liberal Party. And then Donald Trump came along and started doing what he does. And even just this last week, he's been talking about Canada would be great as a 51st state. He says, we don't need anything from Canada. We've been subsidizing them to a tune of $200 billion a year. We don't need their gasoline. We don't need their oil. We don't need their lumber. We don't need their energy of any type. We don't need anything they have. I would say they'd make a great 51st state. He's deluded, really. I mean, Canada has been a close friend, ally, and neighbor who provides a great deal of energy to the northeastern part of the country. Very controversial pipelines that transfer the shale oil through our country from Canada. It's just down to things like newsprint for newspapers. A great majority of that is imported from Canada. Of course, nobody cares about that because newspapers don't exist anymore for all practical purposes. But because of all this, there's been a resurgence of sort of Canadian patriotism. And because of that, the Conservative Party, which had pinned its hopes on, you know, doing sort of a Trump esque sort of a thing and saying, hey, we are Canadians and we will make it better again, and we need to be we need to significantly change our ways and not be liberal Canadians like we've been known for all these years, who are into, you know, preserving nature and being multilingual and multi ethnic, etc., etc. Well, now, because of the anti-Trump fervor in Canada, the Liberal Party's actually got a chance again. And it remains to be seen. Like I said, the polls are still open in the West, I suppose. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that. We'll be following it closely, because there's no way in heck that Canada's going to become the 51st state. It's just not going to happen. And the only way it could happen is by abject belligerence and who wants to have a war with Canada? The other thing is, why does Trump want Canada as the 51st state if they have nothing to offer? Of course they have something to offer. This country is full of a lot of people that don't have a lot of appreciation for other people in other places. There's in the news recently, J.D. Vance has been called out by Chinese officials for referring to generally as China or the Chinese people as peasants, as though he has it in his mind, you know, 1950s National Geographic images of the peasantry of China being the dominant culture of a country that is big. And this minister, I can't remember who this was, but a Chinese official said, "You may not realize, but you know, the middle class in China is whatever it was, 3 or 4 times larger than the entire population of the United States. The metropolitan population in urban cities is again many times greater than the entire population of the United States. There are no backwater full of peasants." I mean, yeah, sure, they got rural people, the farmers. They may have more farmers than we do. Probably they do, because they value fresh food, as many do. Our farmers, on the other hand, are aging out and conglomerating into mega agricultural industries and being bought up by corporations that do vertically integrated agriculture. Soybean farmers, I think it was something, I can't remember the number, 4 or 5% of the entire export market we have is soybeans to China. I mean, if the tariffs kick in and they start getting soybeans from wherever, Brazil and Argentina or whatever, then that's the farmers in this country will not be happy. So I put out the phone number again, 707-923-3911. I do have a peanut gallery with me. In fact, she's got a peanut in her mouth right now. I've got a slight guest who wasn't prepared and didn't have much to say, but I will encourage her to pipe in whenever she wants to. Meanwhile, locally, I have heard that there's some fear that the Veterans Hall rebuild project is kind of on the ropes. The funding that's been approved in the past, and the last hurdle was back in February to put it out for bids, and they had the plans, and they were going to get out bids submitted by March, and now it's coming up in the next meeting on the 6th to actually say, okay, let's hire somebody to build this thing. It was narrowly approved previously. There was a 3-2 vote, and so by one vote, it went forward. And so given the fiscal constraints, concerns of the future and so on, it's really critical that that vote holds. And I'm not sure how it's going to go, but I did hear from a veteran activist that it seemed to be sort of at risk. Anything could happen. So people are encouraging anybody who ever utilized the Vets Hall or hopes to utilize it again in the future or supports veterans in general, which is a whole other story, should contact the supervisors and lobby on their behalf. Of course, you know, some of these older veterans, I think the most pivotal movement towards saving the hall was there was a letter to the editor campaign by a couple of veterans that I happen to know on a personal level, who had their testimony about their service and what happened when they got back from their service and how helpful finding older veterans to work through what they're going through and getting the right services and support that they access through the Veterans Hall and the veterans that were involved in supporting the Veterans Hall. And these days, the veteran pool that we have, the younger veterans are, you know, I don't even know. I mean, this is, of course, the older veterans, a lot of them were drafted or chose to be in service because they thought they would be drafted. Things like that. And so these days, everybody's gung-ho volunteering and moving on with their lives or ending up on the street with suicide. And who knows, you know, is there support for veterans all in the future? We don't know. I think we have a caller, so let's take that caller. Hello, caller.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I just recently got introduced to George Mullins, who is the World War II...
Right, one of our distinguished
hero that's still alive, amazingly, and I talked to one of his caregivers, and I'll be going down to see him probably after he returns from the Best Defense. It's called Best Defense. And they're the guys that pick up the World War II vets and take them out to, like, Omaha and Utah beaches and Normandy. And so I'm going to go back. I'm going to see him probably in July, August, or somewhere in the fall. I don't know when, whenever we can coordinate it. And I'm going to ask him, how would you feel if our new Veterans Hall was named after you? What do you guys think about that?
Well, that's a little controversial because there's some history there. The John Haynes Memorial Veterans Hall, which I saw a little back chatter on Facebook, actually, because apparently on the plans, it refers to the John Haynes Veterans Memorial Hall. And somebody, a veteran, I believe, thought that that was a little misguided because it actually was a memorial for John Haynes. John Haynes was one of the first, the first Garberville resident who was killed in World War I, and a surviving relative of his donated the land where the Vets Hall was built.
Interesting. Interesting. I didn't know those details. I'm really glad you brought that up to my attention. I am going to submit it would be hypocritical of these guys not to give us a Vet Hall, because we've always had a Vet Hall. And we know the details of its demise, but basically was I have some money behind me, and I may decide to put a Vet Hall out in Whitethorn if everything else doesn't come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
Thought I'd put that out there for you. All you have to do is talk to anybody at CAMA. They all know who I am. My name is Chris, and I'm putting that out to the community, and hope you have a great night.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, the Vets Hall, of course, was deeded at some point to the county for courthouse purposes, and because of that, they were given responsibility to maintain the building, failed to maintain it. It went into demise, got black mold, was deemed toxic, condemned, and torn down. So it's been many years now since the Vets Hall was around, and it was a great asset for the community. It was relatively inexpensive to rent the place for events and classes, and it actually served as a storm shelter for winter protection of people that didn't have homes. Peanut Gallery, what do you have to say?
Well, Peanut Gallery remembers, and I wonder if I'm remembering this right, that there was a young veteran who returned, and he had a young son. I don't know where the mother was, but the veteran father was bringing up the child, and he would take the child with him to the veterans meetings. And this young boy was partly brought up by the veterans.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember anything?
I don't remember, no.
I don't want to say names because, you want to have things right.
Right.
But I'm pretty sure that this happened. Someone both you and I know. And I think that's pretty neat. And what I'm thinking of, how valuable our veterans are. And is it possible that they would not have a place to meet? I mean, could this happen?
Well, of course, you can meet anywhere. The idea that the Veterans Hall was sort of designated as a memorial to the veterans,
yes,
you know, the veteran in question initially, but just as a safe place for veterans to do the things that they want to do. And the adjunct rental space was always a way to create a little funding for the operation. They also sell fireworks. They used to sell ice cream at, Reggae on the River, and do a little fundraising to do services. And in the past, things like getting together, the Vets for Peace working through with vets from the Vets Hall, went to Vietnam to build clinics. Vietnam era veterans going to Vietnam to build medical clinic was a pretty bold statement and a dynamic action of national importance, that came out of Garberville. It remains to be seen what happens in the future, but of course, we don't hear a lot about what happens to people after their service. And of course, the most recent service in combat is kind of already dimming in history. It's been 20 years or so since people were coming back from really horrific situations that damaged them. And it remains to be seen what's going to happen. And, you know, of course, the whole emphasis on downgrading and cutting services, you know, of course, that's a big expense. You know, that's always been a sort of shadow expense in the when you calculate what the industry, the defense industry costs, you know, what the Defense Department costs this country, is kind of the gray area that gets left out, depending on, you know, your orientation to citing the numbers. What gets left out is how much it costs to support the Veterans Administration to provide the promised medical services in perpetuity for those who have served the country.
There are veterans who are concerned, though.
Yeah.
Who are worried that they might not be getting the help that they need. And one of my close relatives is a veteran. He was in the Navy during Vietnam. He says that the VA medical insurance is the only insurance he has. Your audio cut out.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's comprehensive. You exercise it, is what I understand. We do have another caller. Let's check that. Hello, caller.
Hey.
Hey. How's it going?
I think we would do well to remember Smedley Butler.
Oh, yeah.
His book, War is a Racket.
Yeah.
Basically, the United States military is an arm of the corporate state. That's basically all they do. You can go back as far as you want with the fruit plantations in Hawaii, where we took over and overthrew the Kingdom of Hawaii. You can bring it all the way up to the first Gulf War, where we went to war for the oil interests and big energy. You can bring that all the way up to the current state of the world right now with what's going on. And we have over 900 military bases around the world. And that's not right. Including outposts or like radar stations or whatever listening devices. But we have 900 manned military bases around the world. Our military budget is over $1 trillion. This year is the proposed budget. It has gone up exponentially through my lifetime. We need to cut easily two-thirds of that or more, close down the bases that are overseas, that all they do is enforce empire. And we need to bring our military home. If you want to support the troops, you should bring our military home instead of sending them out in harm's way.
Yeah, no, well said. No, I agree. And that's one reason I say we don't know what's going to happen in the future, because a lot of the veteran services amongst, you know, the veteran to veteran contact has to do with processing the experience you had. And people come back thinking, what the heck did I just do? Why did they make me do that? You know, and through
because
the,
most everybody volunteered because
exactly they, I mean they volunteer, but they support. Sometimes they get a little more than they bargain for, and I think the value of the peer counseling that has been available in the past is the elder veterans who have kind of processed their experience and come to terms with it, kind of helping the next generation to do that. Because face it, you know, if you're a desperate economic draft victim who gets, you know, shot up somewhere and haven't been well educated and don't know what the deal is and don't have the information to express your dismay at what your government just did to you, you need some help, you know, and often people are afraid to have therapy. They don't want to submit themselves to that kind of scrutiny or something, but having, you know, in-depth conversations with peers who have been there, have experienced that kind of thing. But I totally agree. No, the military needs to change and go away. We have
well,
no just doing stuff that we have done in the past and plan to do in the future. Meanwhile, you know, Yemen is being bombed daily for the last 6 weeks. People in the air.
Well, you know, we've been bombing. Actually, we've been bombing Yemen or supporting the bombing of Yemen for the past 14, 15 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But, I mean, actively, okay, you know, the new Trump assault there ramped it up recently. Yeah.
I want to look back just for a minute, and I agree with what you're saying about how we have gone into places we have no right to be and been in wars and done things that are really terrible. But I want to loop back to how people get into the military or into the services. I'm thinking of my brother who has just turned 18, just days out of high school. And he was walking down the street. And at this time, what he saw was a big sign that said, "Join the Navy, see the world."
And he thought, oh boy.
Yeah. And he came from this very small town in northern Idaho, and he thought, oh,
here's your chance.
Get off the farm. You don't go work in the mill. Mm-hmm. See the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's complicated. Yeah. It's not just a simple problem with a simple solution.
Yeah, and to contrast that with my uncle, who at 18, just out of high school, was drafted to Vietnam and spent his tour over there operating big guns. And remarkably, he researched and found some film footage of his base that, you know, the Pentagon's got all this stuff. And if you know where you were when, then you can look it up. It's remarkable to see my young 18-year-old uncle loading guns and firing. And the landscape looks like it could be Southern Humboldt. You know, they're on this bare knoll in the middle of this valley, surrounded on, you know, forested, albeit more tropical forest, but it, you know, it's as though some hillside in Southern Humboldt was shaved off. A gun emplacement was, and that was their job, is loading and firing guns, boom, 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 into the distance. And he came back and was, you know, he's fine. He didn't go to college afterwards. He got a job and he worked outside all his life and didn't think he could ever be somebody who make a whole bunch of money doing things that people would tell him to do, because he had enough of that. And you know, it is complicated. It's, everybody's got a different story, and funnily enough, I have known some veterans who disdain their service, have really been repulsed by what they did, what they were told to do, have been damaged by it, and yet they become sort of boosters in veterans association or for veterans associations and participate and have a sense of home amongst people who have shared that experience.
Yes. There is a camaraderie.
This is one of the things that I think veterans, if they are repulsed by what they've been forced to do, what they've been, some of the things they've seen, instead of having recruiters in high schools, we should have veteran organizations go to high schools and actually tell the truth of what happens to you once you sign up for the service.
That's really good, I mean, we used to call them draft counselors.
That would be one of the things that would help lessen the recruiting of the military, because we're not going to get away from it. And this is why they keep the wages down. This is why they keep the jobs to be so crappy, is because you have these pockets of abject poverty, and the only way out is the military. You get three hots and a cot. And to a lot of people, that is a huge step up.
Yeah.
And they rely on this economic strangulation of the populace to fund and to furnish their cannon fodder. And before, you know, anybody tries to tell me that I'm a peacenik or anything, I spent 10 years in the military. I know of what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I got out after 10 years because there was no way I was going to try and make it to a retirement, because I knew they were coming up with another war. And I just, there was no way I was going to go to another war.
Mm-hmm.
And I got out when they offered me an out.
Okay.
And this is, I've seen so many of my friends.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for your call. We'll take it to heart that, yes, in fact, we need to downsize the military. And we have such a disconnect from war in this country. Unless you're there in some foreign land, you really haven't experienced it. So, Javi, do we have another caller? I see there was three.
Yeah, I'm putting them on.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, is it my turn?
Yeah.
Hi. So I just wanted to talk about our local vet hall that it seems to me at one point years and years ago now, the vets themselves offered to rebuild their own hall. And
yeah.
They had, you know, these were vets who had gone back to Vietnam and rebuilt and were experienced with construction.
There's some contractors involved.
Yes, yes. And I think they came up with some numbers and, you know, they said they could do it for a much less cost than would be offered, you know, by the usual channels. That didn't happen for some reason. I want to say, I think it is really important for veterans to have their own hall, you know, a safe place to meet. You know, if we can have a hall for just regular folks to go and have fun, I think we can have a dedicated building for our veterans. The other thing I was going to say is, and to reiterate what you said, that hall was available for all kinds of events. It wasn't just exclusive, you know, for the vets. So it was really a valuable asset to the community. I wanted to just jump back to what you were talking about before, just to say that as far as our executive officer and his relations with other countries, well, you know, the notion that Canada doesn't have anything they don't have anything that we need. I suppose you could say this about a lot of other places, but I think the main thing that we need with relations with the rest of the world is goodwill and good relations and the ability to meet on common level ground and not, you know, our guy has to be the superior who talks down to everybody and pushes everybody around. This really is not going to work. And that's about all I have to say.
Yeah, that's the, you know, Donald Trump continues to express that we have been ripped off for years. And they're taking advantage of us, all the countries in the world, because we give them money. We give them lots of money, and all they do is give us goods and services, you know, as though that's a bum deal.
Right, right. And they give us goodwill and interesting places to visit when we want to go on vacation. And,
yeah. Well, that's another aspect of this whole tariff trade war thing that, you know, the trade deficit that Trump believes is in his deluded mind that the deficit of trade is a bad thing to individual countries' trade deficits, when in fact the trade deficit must be viewed in the aggregate globally. You know, it's some places there's a surplus, some places there's a deficit. We get stuff, they get stuff, et cetera. Anyway, besides that, where we have a trade surplus in this country is our services that we provide, including tourism and education. And of course, tourists are looking at America in a different light right now. You know, can I go to America and feel good about it? Do I want to risk, you know, what seems to be a problem there? There was just a story of a Canadian woman who I think she got into the news because she used to be on a TV show or a movie or something, but she's a businesswoman, has a lot of different business things going in this country, has periodically moved between Canada and United States without any problem. There was some issue that came up, a visa issue. Her attorney was in San Diego, so she was in San Diego trying to get into the country from presumably Mexico. And she was detained, and the whole business that she was going through was deemed fishy by the authorities there. And from being a white woman of Canadian descent trying to get into the United States for business purposes, she was put up against a wall, patted down, and arrested. This is the kind of thing that's going to dissuade tourism, let us say, international travelers. You know, people having their phones inspected at the airport and for suspicious activity, or dare we say anti-Trump activity, because already Trump has said that about the latest polls, about the numbers going down, about his approval rating, that the pollsters are fraudsters and liars and lunatics, and they're anti-Trump and they need to be punished and prosecuted because they're fake. So I suppose if you had evidence on your phone of aligning yourself with some poll, that you could be deemed fake and a risk and anti-Trump and therefore a threat to the nation, etc. Anyway, the other service that we provide globally is education. People from all over the world want to go to universities in the United States. Many of them would prefer to stay here after their university tour to take advantage of American life and do the American thing. Not all of them want to, not all of them are allowed to, but the education of the world is one of the things that we do. People are proud of their American university educations and make the world run, the higher echelons of educated intellectual people make the world what it is. And of course, some of that has to change. We know that. I mean, this, you know, the things that get taught because of the perversion of education that's happened in this country sometimes. But generally speaking, it's encouraging to see that some of the universities are standing up, banding together to resist the changes that are being demanded to what is ostensibly a, you know, free exchange of ideas on university campuses, which is what should happen when you're being educated.
But I think some of our friends and allies are getting out of sorts with us.
Yes, they are. And
well, I certainly hope so, and that this will ultimately have some kind of effect. I'm just going to say one more thing, and then I'll get off. The world and our relations are a permeable thing. You know, we need for there to be flow of information and you know, movement of ideas and goods and services and like that. And you know, we can't, as a world, we can't function everybody coming out of their little cubicles. There has to be some movement there, and this administration is trying to do something else with it. So Anyway, that's what I have to say, and thank you for your show.
Thank you for your call. Yeah, you know, things are in the mix here, changing. The what happens in the future, the movement to resist Donald Trump and his administration policies is on the rise. From various pundits calling it the turning point, to various politicians referring to the constitutional crisis, to the courts disallowing Trump's activities. This is just going to change more and more. This is 100 days come Tuesday, is 100 days in office. And as The Economist had on their headline, I can't remember the number, it was only 1,300 and something days left, you know. But to think that we have to have this level of chaos and accelerated chaos, basically, into the future is remarkable. I'm just getting live update here from CBC, Radio Canada. The national broadcaster has projected a win for the Liberal Party in an extraordinary election that was dominated by President Trump's threats to Canada's sovereignty and its economy. They're projecting 24 seats, so let's see, 46% Liberal, 39% Conservative, and then, of course, the minor Bloc Québécois, the New Democrats, and the Greens will share power in a minor way. But it looks like the Liberals are going to win, and that the drive for Canadian patriotism to resist Donald Trump's desires will grow. trade war, look out. You know, the latest thing was that Donald Trump or somebody in the administration has says that this trade war is rhetoric, this trade war escalation with China. Oh, it was Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary. He said this escalating trade war has to stop, referring to China's activities. And like, you started it, dude. I mean, come on. Don't be ridiculous.
Is there another call?
No. You can call it 707-923-3911 to put your 2 cents in, or call it 2 bits. I don't care.
So is Mark Carney the prime minister?
He is currently the prime minister, who is filling out the term until the election, and now he, because he's the leader of the Liberal Party, he will continue in that role until somebody says, hey, we don't like him anymore.
So he's not only the interim.
He will not have a full term. Yeah, interesting. And meanwhile, Duterte in the Philippines has been arrested for crimes against humanity. Former president, who was very Trump-like, Trump echoed his thing, themes. Duterte echoed Trump themes. Bolsonaro from Brazil has been arrested for corruption. You know, there was a thing about during the first impeachment thing when Trump was going off about it, like, in no other country in the world are ex-presidents get treated this way. Well, actually, they do. It's very common that the guy who declared martial law in Korea was like Korea or Taiwan. Now I can't remember. Korea, South Korea, declared martial law briefly and tried to close down Congress. And Congress said, no, 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 block the doors. And basically, there was a crisis, a constitutional crisis. That guy has been impeached and removed from office, and I think has some jail time coming because of his activities. You know, you just can't get away with it forever. It may take a while, but you got to do the right thing.
Well, neither Hitler nor Mussolini got away with it.
Yeah,
forever.
They did for a while, but you know what happens in the end. Whoops, we lost. Yeah, you know, oops, I'm hanging upside down from a lamppost. Oops, I'm dead in a trench. You know, it's.
But they did a lot of damage.
Yeah, and that seems to be par for the course for these guys who feel the hubris to believe they know what everybody should do in order to maintain the thing that I want you to do. And, you know, we have a percentage of population that you'd have to refer to as cultists. They believe in Donald Trump. Others believe in Christian nationalism. Others believe in racial nationalism, white power. There are, of course, factions of radical anarchists and you know, ne'er-do-well echo warriors that have been demonized as terrorists. But in the end, nobody gets to decide what everybody has to do. That's the main message of our country's founding, and whether we've never achieved this ideal. You know,
it's still an experiment.
Yeah, the inherent sort of patriotism that comes out of the starting of this country has, of course, been perverted by the way we recall it and who tells the story. And you know, but the bottom line is a revolt against the authority, the arbitrary authority of those who demand something of you. That's the bottom line. Pure and simple. 250 years ago, this shot heard around the world, April 19th. You know, that this was when it came to a head that the colonists in Massachusetts said, you know what, you can't come and take our guns. We're not going to let you because we need those because you're dangerous. You're a danger to us and we need to defend ourselves. And that was the beginning of, like, no, we say no to kings. We say no to people who feel they have a right to tell everybody what should be happening. No, we stand on our own right to decide what is right and just. And we will establish, as best we can, a government that allows for that and protects the rights of its citizens. Therefore, we are in a constitutional crisis at this point because the checks and balances, the separation of powers, is not working in our favor. And of course, the fourth state, the fourth estate is supposed to be the media.
Yes.
The media has been corrupted as well. I mean, I won't go down the rabbit hole of fake news because I don't believe news to be fake. I believe opinions can be fake. I can believe misinformation can be fake. But news is the reporting of factual activities, things that have happened. And of course, relies on the critical faculties of the consumer of that information to determine where it is between the lines that opinion is being put forth, where things are being stretched to fulfill a certain agenda, et cetera, propaganda, all that. You have to look between the lines, but there are, in fact, demonstrable facts that take place that are reported. That's news. That's the fourth estate. When somebody reports on what has happened, they investigate some corrupt practice and they find the evidence of it and they tell you about it. That is not fake news. What's called the fifth estate, the most important component of our government is we, the people, yes, as it says at the front of every document, in order to establish, et cetera, et cetera.
The citizen.
The citizenry. And of course, this was written, these documents that govern our establishment here were written at a time when it was a given that the people involved in these activities were aristocrats, they were educated, they had family ties of importance, they were the important people. They didn't see a contradiction at that time between the important people and everybody else, because they felt they were doing the right thing, a lot of them. A lot of them were in it for the same reason Donald Trump's in it, for power, for influence, for grandeur.
Could you stop just a second?
Oh, I'll take a breath. Yeah, yeah, thanks.
Are you talking about the men who were writing the Constitution?
Yeah, I mean, all that whole crowd. I mean, everybody, all the movers and shakers, of the elite.
They were all, quote, gentlemen.
And they had slaves.
Yes.
And they had belief structures. And, of course, they only could go so far away from what they knew, you know, and established government in the model of Western government and common law as best they could, because that was seen as, you know, the pinnacle of the Enlightenment that allowed for the rights of man and what the duties of service and the social contract were.
But even as gentlemen and coming from somewhat the same backgrounds, there was still argument and disagreement,
right,
and discourse.
Debate.
Yes.
Debate in the press, amongst the people in the halls of government. Debate was a constant. And these days, debate is ridiculous. I mean, we call it presidential debates. There's not debates. There's statements of belief that get bantered back and forth. The question is asked and they ignore the question. And then the other person ignores a response and goes off on their own thing. There's no debate involved whatsoever. So it's up to us.
True. It's true. I noticed this. I have noticed this more recently. That when someone is asked a question, they can deflect. Mm-hmm. And very often they do deflect. They don't answer the question. And they go on talking about whatever it is they want to talk about, and they never get to answering the question.
And a debate is not the same as an argument.
No.
Right. Yeah. Disagreement. Debate is, you know, displaying the evidence that supports your contention. You know, there has to be some there, shall we say. So let me put the phone number out there one more time. We've got 10 minutes to go, 923-3911 with the 707 prefix. And you can call in and make a comment. You know, it's very strange that I am a anti-authoritarian type of person. I've been on the fringe of society all my life in terms of my belief systems and you know, inquiry mind and so on. And yet I feel a sort of devotion to this concept of patriotism in that the just and reasoned arguments for justice and liberty that this nation has tried. I mean, maybe it was because I was a Boy Scout. Did I drink the Kool-Aid? Maybe, but I am prepared. I was being prepared ever since for whatever comes. There is a certain nostalgia in the idea of supporting your nation, taking back your flag is something that is important. There's all kinds of baggage, of course. There's lots of baggage.
Well, I feel that there was some point, and I don't know when this happened, when the Republicans appropriated things that were symbolic of America.
Right, love it or leave it.
And they were saying, we are the patriots.
Yeah.
And that made me kind of angry.
Yeah, no, that whole campaign, you know, you're against something the government is doing, so you know, love it or leave it was a bumper sticker during Vietnam. That sort of Archie Bunker mentality, you say something against the government, well, you're a traitor. You don't even support our government. Well, that's not the way it's supposed to be. You're supposed to say things against your government.
I'm noticing we haven't said much about Russia, Ukraine.
Yeah.
We haven't said anything about Palestine,
I know,
Israel.
And this is part of the big problem of getting distracted with this petty crap that, I mean, that's part of the strategy, I think, of wearing us down. Of course, the Pope died the day after Easter, which is really something when you get down. He'd been really ill.
I think he held out.
He was well enough to do Easter and then die the next day after shaking J.D. Vance's hand. There's a campaign out there, J.D. Vance killed the Pope. But because of the funeral, a big, you know, global state affair, all the presidents flying in. Zelensky and Trump had their first meeting since the White House meeting and were in a secret conference in the middle of a big room.
Did you notice the picture of them both with their heads down?
Yeah, they were hunched in, talking under their voice to each other about stuff, which we don't know what any of it was. But the latest thing is that the ceasefire, Russia has now, in negotiations with the United States and blah, 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 has agreed we should have a ceasefire. Well, there has been a ceasefire. They just didn't honor it. We should have a ceasefire beginning on, what is it, May 10th, which is our victory day.
Yes.
They don't say this, but the hidden thing is that this is the day that the Russians defeated the Nazis, that they celebrate with pomp and circumstance and parades and glorious patriotism. Soviet style.
Yeah.
So we want to be able to say, more or less, we have a ceasefire on that day and that it will last for like 10 days. And of course, the response from Zelensky is, why do we have to wait for your celebration day to have a ceasefire? Just stop now.
Yes. Why not?
There was some notion, Trump said, I think they're getting very close to a deal and blah, blah, blah. And there's some notion that Crimea will be Russian. Well, the fact is they'd need a constitutional amendment and the election of the people, a majority of the people, to actually cede Crimea to Russia. Nobody wants that. The Ukrainian population doesn't want that. The president doesn't want it. The government is not of a mind. The idea is that Russia gets everything they want and Ukraine has to let go of territorial claims. What I think is probably going to happen, and there's negotiations ongoing, I think something like they'll have to concede, yes, okay, Crimea is occupied by Russia, but it is still part of Ukraine. They might throw that out there and Russia is going to say, blah, 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 blah. But
Ukraine is going to say, this is how it looks. But
in order to create peace and go forward,
right,
we have to acknowledge that, yes, you have occupied that land.
But it's occupied.
And we will now proceed to go through civil processes to make that right for us. And it's an illegal act. They seize land illegally. So there's a process to go through somewhere. Russia may or may not agree to that. I think it was today they first admission that they actually do have North Korean troops in the field.
Yes.
Who have been dying left and right in order to, So that's an ongoing, who knows what's going to happen yet. Europe is behind, you know, the idea that Russia demands that Ukraine demilitarize is ridiculous, because now, especially in the face of, yes, we gained territory, and now you have no military, so we want more territory, of course, is what Ukrainians are afraid of, and that's also Europeans are afraid of, so it's unsettled. Meanwhile, in Gaza, they're starving, no food supplies, they ran out of the, what was it, the organization that provides the food, the World Health Organization, has run out of supplies in the warehouses in Gaza. They have not been resupplied ever since some period in the past. Famine is a given. Attacks continue. People still die. And the right wing in Israel is all for it. Let's just do them. There's peace talks going on in Israel, in Egypt, in Cairo, I guess. And some Egyptians say, oh, they're getting close. Of course, we haven't heard anything from the parties involved. So close to what, we don't know. Again, untenable demands made on the aggressor's behalf.
So meanwhile, there is no compassion for Gaza.
Well, there's a lot of compassion for Gaza. Not in the Israeli government, apparently.
That is what I meant.
Yeah, and so meanwhile, the fallout of supporting Palestinians continues. The man who was being going through the final phases of his citizenship proceedings was called to an interview to do the final interview before he went to become a citizen. And
in Canada, we're back.
No, this is the United States.
Where are we?
What's his name? Mr. Madawi, who is a student, Palestinian student activist, on his way to his U.S. citizenship, just about to graduate from college.
Right.
Wants to be a citizen. I believe, is he a Buddhist or a Hindu or something? You know, he's a philosophy student. He's a thoughtful man. He's talked about the evil of anti-Semitism. He believes in justice. But he's being deemed anti-Semitic, and being deemed anti-Semitic now, if you're a foreign citizen, is enough to deport you, because anti-Semitism is deemed terrorism. Now, the fact is, he's not anti-Semitic. One could argue he's Semitic himself, but that's a whole other story. The fact that I think a judge came out and said, you must not deport him. There's a proceeding here. He's in the process.
Oh, he's the man who was approached. People were hooded.
He was taken off the street in front of the facility where he was going to do an interview. He was called, basically lured in for an interview. They knew who he was.
Yes.
Because he was one of these prominent activists, like Columbia or something. And, yeah.
But he couldn't see the faces.
Well, this is more and more, is that the ICE agents are covering their faces, not wearing uniforms, not refusing to show their IDs. This is getting ugly.
It is.
And it's dangerous and risky behavior that is going to blow back. And hopefully we, the people, can maintain civil decorum and not incite violence, which is what a group like this, hooded, unidentified, belligerent authority needs to do the thing that they want to do, is crack down and create a situation in which we cannot win.
Isn't this illegal? I mean,
it is something on the face of it. It is. Yeah. And the courts will determine this. We're getting to the top of the hour, and boy, it goes by fast when you get on a rant.
It does.
You have anything to add?
I wish I had been more prepared. It was a surprise, but you know how peanut galleries are.
Yeah, you're always on the end.
And I'm glad.
So I've got some information on the Politically Correct Week in Review Facebook page about various things, and I'll be posting more in the coming days here. I am not at home, and I have a little more leisure time in the evening sometimes, and so I will be returning, and we'll go from there, and boy.
This has been a KMUD podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.